Greetings, podlets! Able Seaman Ben Shires here, easing you once again into the warm and inviting sound waves of the Dave Weekly. That's it, don't be afraid to let the salty fluid wash over you. I'll be there to give you a sponge down at the end. But before all that, boy oh boy, have we got a show for you. And FYI, when I said boy just then, I meant it as in a life boy like you get at the beach. I know what you're thinking, wow. If it makes you feel any better, guys, I don't know how I do it either. I guess it must be what the school psychiatrist referred to as being special. Two other special people, although probably not in that way, are our guests this week, the historically accurate and comedically astute Humphrey Carr and panel show darling Catherine Ryan. They're plumbing marvellous. Yes, I'm joined today on the Dave Weekly by Humphrey Carr. Hello, Humphrey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, yes.
Excellent. Now, we met in the foyer.
We did.
And I couldn't help but over here at the registration desk, we had to sign in.
It's high security. Yeah.
Well, we like to screen our guests in Dave. You have no idea the amount of up-and-coming comedians throwing themselves at our doors.
I saw the corpses of a few outside.
Names that shall never be heard or spoken of again.
I know, the poor devils.
Yeah, but, you know, they tried hard. It's a bit like that scene on Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade where he's going through the tunnel and he has to decipher the codes.
Oh, yeah.
People have fallen by the wayside.
The path of the penitent man.
Yeah, exactly. You have chosen wisely.
Yeah, that's what the man said to me downstairs when I gave him my name.
He did. Yeah. You pushed the right buttons. Of the security man. Do not try push his buttons. You will only end up in a fight.
Exactly. And remember, of course, there's no J in the Latin alphabet.
Oh, very true. Very true. So he's...
Yahweh starts with an I.
Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But the problem that almost you encountered, which I can see might have arisen in the past, was the pronunciation of your surname.
Yes.
Is spelt...
It's spelt K-E-R, but it's pronounced Carr.
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Is that just to wrong foot people?
No, well, so I quite often, I don't know why today, I particularly chose to really kind of pursue the point. I quite often say, if I'm signing in for things, I just say Kerr. It's much easier. It's like, well, my branch of the family, K-E-R, K-E-R-R, C-A-R-R, all that, they all come from the same place, which is sort of Scottish borders originally. My family were from Ireland, so we went there, and before anyone decided how to spell things, or really how to pronounce things either, we were like, it's Carr, and we're spelling it this way.
Yeah, it's our name, we'll say it how we bloody want.
I quite often fill in forms and hand them over to people in banks and things like that, and in front of me, they put another R. They go, oh, you've left something off there? I think, God, how stupid do you think I am that I can't spell my own name?
The impertinence of somebody to
think
that they
could just... insolence. Well, these bank clerks.
That's very... It's quite unusual to find someone with a name that's relatively short, but that problematic.
Yeah, I'd understand if I had a sort of Armenian name, which were Harabajadudian or something, that just had loads of different J's and A's and silent H's. But no, we've chosen the difficult route with what should be a very straightforward name.
Do people automatically, because you've changed the E sound to an R sound, Does it then come across as maybe sounding a bit more posh to people?
I don't know.
Insinuate
I don't know whether
that?
People not thus far. No, I think people are already happy with the level to which I appear posh without having to pour any more onto it.
I mean,
name pronunciation.
I raised this hypothesis.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're sat in front of me wearing a Team GB tracksuit top and fingerless gloves.
I am. Yes.
Can you explain where the top comes from? That's quite intriguing.
Well, the top is it comes from the wellspring of patriotism I feel deep within my body after our triumphant summer games. I don't know when people are listening to this, but in the summer of 2012 we had the Olympics here in London. It was a great success. I enjoyed it a lot.
And, thank you for recording that for posterity.
Yeah, well, I don't know when people might find, they may find this in 1,000 years time.
If all the other records were destroyed and they just had this.
Imagine this was the one thing that students of Olympic history and years ago, well, we do know that this, on this podcast.
But if they were taking it quite literally as well and thought, who is this Humphrey Carr? I mean, he's done very well to get through security, it sounds.
Yeah.
Already scores of comedians lost their lives, but he's made it through to talk about the Olympics.
Yeah, people may be unaware of the extent to which this is just us chatting nonsense. this could be like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the Bible is, surely. Just someone's doodlings that have been taken way too seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought maybe you were some kind of ersatz athlete.
Oh, I wish. I love, you know, I'm a big sports fan. And there was a lot of rumours going around about sort of 2008 when people started to gear up for the Olympics that they were looking for people to play on the men's handball team.
Yes, I remember
this. They wanted
this.
Really tall people. I'm 6'7". So I was really excited about that. And then I suddenly remembered that I am by no means good at sports. And the best I could possibly do would be to bring shame on this great nation of ours. So I thought I'd best, you know, I'm a watcher, not a doer.
So Humphrey, the Penny Dreadfuls, who are your sketch group?
Yes.
Now, are you still in existence? Is that still something
going
on?
Yeah, we're still technically corralled together, but we wrote and recorded a play in late November, early December, which is going to be on Boxing Day on Radio 4
at
2:15, if anyone's at loose end, about Hereward the Wake, another history themed show. Hereward the Wake was an Anglo-Saxon freedom fighter, fought against William the Conqueror after the Battle of Hastings, and he's a sort of proto Robin Hood, basically. Our kind of our take on it is we're trying to suggest that he is the genesis of, or the origin story for Robin Hood. And there are some people who think that might be the case.
Every good story needs an origin story.
Exactly.
I mean, Hollywood's taught us that, if nothing else.
Hells yes.
Is this your plot to get a movie made then? Because this is great.
Everything I do is my plot to get a movie made. I think it would make a great movie, actually. The shame of it is, with all our... We've done three history plays for Radio 4. We did Guy Fawkes and then the Revolution play, and then the French Revolution play, and then Hereward. And all of them sort of end with our main hero being killed by authority figures. So I suppose... I don't know whether it's got a sort of slightly secret right wing, don't mess with authority because they will defeat you, freedom fighters vibe. But we're doing our first gig in Donkey's Ears tomorrow. But we kind of were all quite busy doing solo stuff, really, because we did 5 years as a sketch team together and then thought, let's all go off and try and do our own thing. And then hopefully if those are successful, we can come back together stronger than the sum of our parts. And that's been going sort of quite well, really, is that we've all just trotting along on our own.
So, Humphrey, one thing I unfortunately, and please berate me for this, haven't yet got round to actually watching any Penny Dreadful stuff, but I have heard you can track things down online, and it's brilliant. And
some heroes stuck pretty much all of it on YouTube.
Yes,
which is really good.
I mean, and do you welcome that? Is that
totally, because we did two series for what is now what was Radio 7, BBC Radio 7, which doesn't exist anymore. It's sort of become 4 Extra, and one of those series got moved onto Radio 4. And the thing is, you know, people. Nowadays, you know, people don't sit in and listen to the wireless and hear these things. And once they're gone, once they're off iPlayer, that's it. And, you know, as far as we're concerned, we're thrilled if it means people get to hear it at some stage or another. And I think it's very helpful.
I mean, it's not all been... you mentioned your fans there being quite heroic, but some fans have taken it upon themselves to be even more than heroic. There has been digressions... by some people.
I think I know to which you are referring.
The members of the Penny Dreadfuls, and more than just your members, but other parts of your body too.
Yeah.
Erotic fan fiction.
Yep. That's when you know you've made it, is when people write what I believe is called slash fiction.
Right, okay.
Where
is that where you do a wee on people?
God, I don't know what that's called. slash fiction, probably. So the term slash fiction, I gather, comes from... apparently it really originated with Star Trek fan fiction, where a lot of people would write... Apparently it's a lot of girls write it, apparently, but it tends to be homosexual content, where they take characters, male double acts, usually. So the original one was Kirk and Spock. So it was Kirk slash Spock is how they...
So this is what slash fiction means.
And they would write scenarios in which Kirk and Spock would make boom time with each other in a variety of different sci-fi ways. Matt Crosby of Matt Crosby fame and also Sketch Team Pappies. He sent me a text one night with a link, or he sent me a tweet being like, oh my God, have you seen this?
With a link to this thing. Wrote it, mate.
Crosbow, I think, is one of the great masters of the Google Alerts. And I think he's got Google Alerts set up so he can see what's going on.
All his friends as well.
Well, I think he specifically does it for pappies and stuff because it's very useful to know, you know, if you want to put quotes and things on posters and this, that, and the other. Anyway, a Googler had popped up with his name and he'd followed the link to a thing where a very weird, quite innocent one, which involved him and I and Miles Jupp and Milton Jones and like a whole number of Tom Basden and loads of different people from the sort of British comedy scene in this kind of weird, semi-twilighty, semi-homoerotic-y sort of sprawling epic.
How many semis were there in this story?
Everyone had a semi. It's like, once you got past the first paragraph, you were semi-tumescent. There's no two ways about it. But I found this website and was like, oh, and you had a thing where you could click on, had tags, and I clicked on the Humphrey Carr tag, and boom, went through and found there were three specific Penny Dreadfuls ones. Two of which were very weird, and again, not in a sort of like, ooh, that's creepy, just a bit like, right, okay. one where I was ill, I had a cold, and Dave and Tom were sort of looking after me and stroking my head a lot whilst I removed my sweaty shirt. I know, the mind boggles.
And then, like the but English
then one,
patient.
Yeah, yeah. Then there was one that was full-on triple X super blue action.
Really?
Yeah. And in a very like 1970s Swedish blue movie style.
Wow.
It was about how we, after gigs, play strip poker and Tom always intentionally loses so that Dave and I can double team him real good.
Were you worried at that point that there might be a leak in the group that these stories were getting out?
We need to move flats. They've wired this place. It's odd because it's peculiarly, I don't know, it's almost flattering that someone has taken the time to envision a scenario in which you're straight up jizzing all over one of
your
pals.
It sounds so specific in a way.
That's the other thing that's brilliant about it, is that there are some details in there that suggest this person knows quite a lot about us in some ways, about sort of specific things that we like...
sexual peccadilloes, I hope.
No. None of those. Largely inaccurate on that stuff. By and large.
Just read the stories, go the opposite. That's what Humphrey likes.
Yes. I don't know, because I think the opposite would mean me being bummed by a lady. I wouldn't say no. Try everything once. What was funny about it is that Tom's very flexible in real life, because he was a gymnast when he was younger, and we do a lot of that in our shows. He does the splits and stuff. It is great. It's very funny. You get all sorts of fun out of that. And so they obviously knew this, and so there's a lot of detail about Tom doing sort of flexible things. And then him, when he was almost achieving, how can one put this in a gentlemanly fashion? When he was about to arrive, shall we say, he starts swearing softly in Spanish, which is funny because Tom does speak Spanish and takes every conceivable opportunity to ensure that everyone around him knows this. He's extremely proud of this fact.
So hola, what was that? Sense. Yeah, speak Spanish.
Oh,
mate,
that. Oh, sorry. Was I? Oh no.
So adios. Oops.
I
there
did
we go
spend.
Again.
A month in Zaragoza? No, I don't know. He lived... where did Tom live? He went somewhere. Anyway, yeah, he does speak very good Spanish. Dave speaks Spanish as well, actually. I speak nothing other than the Queen's English. It's weird. It's kind of... I don't know, as I say, it's weirdly flattering, but then at the same time, like, I don't have any brothers, but Dave and Tom are as close as I get to having brothers in my life. And so there's something sort of unbelievably grimy about it in that regard. I think if someone had, you know, if anyone's out there and wants to write slash fiction about me, please, by all means, I'm very happy to be described hammering away at Tom Parry from Pappy's Fun Club, for example, a dear friend of mine, but it wouldn't feel quite as weird as bumming either Dave or Tom.
Thanks for dropping by.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Here's Catherine Ryan, someone who's not afraid to spill the beans and then make them into conversational beans on toast. Catherine Ryan, hello and welcome to the Dave Weekly.
Hello. Hello, what are you beginning? Doing? I'm very well. Thank
you're looking you. Very festive today.
You're looking very snappy.
Well, thank you, but your jumper has a snowman on it.
It does. That's Why incredible. Do we bother for a podcast? They can't see us.
I know, but I can see, and to be honest, it's lifted me at least 5% just by your jumper.
Oh, good.
I'm now running on 45%, so we're getting there.
I'm all for a bad Christmas jumper.
I don't think it's even that bad, though. I mean, I've seen bad... That, I mean, the snowman looks a little bit like he's you know, a few snowballs short of a full snowman, doesn't he? His
yeah.
smile's quite crooked.
I did castrate the snowman before I put it on. I did Google last Christmas, bad Christmas jumper, found this little number on eBay, and then I just brought it out for year two.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the great thing about Christmas, because you don't get that much wear out of them, really, do you?
I mean, in Dalston, maybe in June,
wear... It's ironic, yeah.
Yeah.
This in my Game Boy that I'm now playing on. I think it's one of those things that can lift the mood of even the most morose of situations. But
yeah.
Were you saying you've got a Christmas gig tonight, so it's...
I've got a Christmas gig tonight, yes, December. They're just knocking out the Christmas stuff.
It's the month to be festive. If you're going to be Christmassy at any point of the year, this feels like a good time.
Well, you know what I was thinking today when I put on my Christmas jumper? Because it is red, bright red, with the snowman in the middle. I watched a documentary about Elmo. You know Sesame Street's red little
yes.
puppet Elmo? And it was about puppeteering and all these things. And it said that one of the reasons Elmo was so popular is every good Muppet needs a hook. You know, like, what's this puppet's hook?
And like Elmo's, every good pirate.
Yeah. And Elmo's hook is, Elmo loves you. Elmo loves you. And, like, he's like a child, but he needs children to love him as well. And I was thinking, as a comedian, that's also kind of my hook. It is. I'm like Elmo without the...
You don't need children to love you.
Well, have you heard the rumors?
About Elmo, yeah.
Elmo's loved a few
what
children.
Would you probably... They are just rumors, I should stress.
Tickled them the wrong way, allegedly. Listen, I don't think Elmo's done anything wrong, allegedly. He was allegedly with 16-year-olds, allegedly, which would not have been a crime, allegedly, if he'd done it here. It's a big problem in America, allegedly.
Yeah. So, you mentioned that you're Canadian.
I am.
Catherine. And we have had many, many Canadians on this show.
Oh,
I was trying to research, go back over our archives. We've been broadcasting for about 18 months or so now. And I think you're our sixth Canadian, which is... And there's many more working in Britain as well. But we've had Craig Campbell, Stuart Francis, Tony Law, Phil Nichol, Tom Stade, now you.
Yes.
Why are Canadian comics so desperate to leave Canada?
Well, what did they say?
Well, I don't think it really struck me when I was interviewing them, but I came to, because you were Canadian, I thought, I wonder how many we've actually had on. And six to me seems, out of the sort of the UK comedy scene, which isn't that big, seems to me to be quite a few.
Well, I can tell you the real answer.
Yes.
But it might be a secret.
Okay, no, okay. Go on. We won't
The
tell
reason
anyone.
Is the bears in Canada run
okay.
us up. No, really, it's because unlike the gentleman, the very wonderful comics that you mentioned earlier, I didn't do the road in Canada for years and years before leaving like they did, with the exception of Tony Law, who I think has been here the longest.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Phil
he's
Nichol's
been here longer
been
than
long.
He was in Canada, I
Tom
think.
Stade's been here pretty long. They've all been here a while now. But anyway, in Canada, it's tough because there are so much land and considerably fewer people in a lot of the cities compared to the UK. And to gig, I mean, you can only do the great clubs maybe once a year, and then it takes you an 8-hour flight to get somewhere else. And then in the middle, kind of like America, the outsides are pretty clever, but the middle's like not. And then there's just no market for comedy to grow, I think, or not as big of a market. And then when you go to these places, a lot of the time they just want to hear about like drinking and fucking, whereas in the UK,
that's your Saturday night material, right?
Yeah. And I mean, there's an exception to every rule. It's not always that way, but you need to be a great comic to survive at all in Canada. You need to be great. You need to put up with a lot, and you need to stand above the rest. So then when you come here, I find the UK culture to be firstly such a pub culture. So every night of the week you're up for live something, live music, live comedy, just banter anyway. And you're more literary. So I think there's room for all kinds of different comics. There's just a lot more. I mean, it's tough to explain, but I think...
Should we just say bears?
It's the Bears. How can I sum it up in a kind of concise way? This is what I think. I think the comedy circuit in Canada is so rough and so lean that to survive there, you have to be really, really, really good. And then when you come here, you're spoiled for choice. Mm. And you're just appreciated more. Like guys like Stuart Francis, he's so clever and so funny. I think he's probably reaches more people who understand him here than he would have in Canada. It's not a big live music comedy culture overall.
Mm.
I'd say that's why.
What I would say is that you left a town that sounds to me, just from its name, enchanting. Is it Sarnia? Is that
Sarnia, yes.
It rhymes with Narnia.
It rhymes
How
with Narnia.
How could you leave a place like that?
Well, I should firstly say that Sarnia has set up Google Alerts. So every time I talk about Sarnia, or Sarnia gets in any kind of review or newspaper or anything, the town goes mental. And they're like, she's talking about us again. They don't want me talking about them because I say horrible things about Sarnia. It's a horrible, horrible place. It's not enchanted.
Are you sure?
No, there are fewer lions.
But how many wardrobes? I mean, you must have something.
There's a wardrobe. One witch, but I left. Depends on what you want out of life, really. I had some good times in Sarnia. Mm. And it's a tight community. Everybody knows everybody. But there are these big, awful petrochemical plants there.
Mm.
And everybody says it's fine and it's not hurting anyone. But it's got to be. It's got to be hurting them. It's like there's lots of water there. And I feel like it's poison, but I can't prove it. And it's right on the border of America, like not far from Detroit.
Mm.
And it's interesting, Sarnia. I mean, it's a bit of a cultural hole, put it that way.
But, I mean, talking about growing up, which you have done quite a lot. You've covered that in your comedy shows, in your sort of Edinburgh shows, I should say. Your debut hour last year, I think, was very much focused on your life so far and how that had affected you. And you talk about your mum and your parenting in that quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, your from your own words was that your mum was quite pushy and she used to take you to pageants and things like that as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously that must have shaped you in some way into becoming what you are now.
It did. I mean, I feel badly because my mum, bless her, like, is such a lovely woman and she's always been involved in music and in arts. And I think she's not from Sarnia. So when she moved there and had three little girls, she just felt bored like I was, you know, and thought, oh, and she got us really involved in things. And I, for the sake of comedy, I really made her out to be the villain in that show.
Mm.
But really, did she push us or did she just help us do what we wanted to do? I feel so bad. Yeah, you know, I look back on that show and my mom was in the show.
Yeah, so because she actually featured in the show.
We did a little song and dance together at the
end. So how was that? Because, I mean, obviously, talking about your parents is one thing, but for them actually to be in your show. So presumably she was living with you for the month in Edinburgh.
She came down for the month, yeah. My mom's a computer systems analyst, which is not what she wanted to do. So for her to have a month at the Edinburgh Fringe, she was delighted. So she came and she wore this sexy little pink dress at the end and did this dance. You know, the kind of mom, like the pageant mom, the beautiful blonde, like big boobs. That's what my mom is like. And so she outshone me. She looked amazing. People thought she was an actress. They didn't know she was my mom.
So do you think, I mean, is it that kind of classic parents trying to live their own dreams with the kids thing? Or is it do you think that would be too harsh? Or what do you think?
I mean, I think it's harsh.
Mm.
And true.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of parents do that, whether it be through athletics or you want the best for your children. I'm a mom now. And, you know, ideally you love them no matter what. That's how I feel now. But you wouldn't be right if you didn't push them a little.
Yeah, you started in TV as a kind of presenter in Canada, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I flew the coop. I left Sarnia as soon as I could. When I was 18, I went to uni in Toronto, which is like a bigger city that some people have heard of.
Yeah.
And that's more like the Canada's New York. And I went to uni
there.
Is
that how it's marketed on the postcards?
It is.
Come to Canada's New York. It's the slightly less big apple.
Yeah, the clean apple.
Mm.
And not as tasty. And I did TV there. I knew I wanted to do something in the arts, but I wasn't really sure what. So I danced on this show called Electric Circus, which is like the Canadian MTV had a show every Friday night that just played like club music and people danced.
Is that like that thing on Friends that Ross?
It's exactly like that, like Studio 54, like just a dance show where there are flashing lights and you zoom in on a girl's bum and then you zoom. I was that.
Nice.
And in my town, everybody was like, whoa, you're on Electric Circus. And I'm like, that's right, pal. And it was not at all. I had to stand. I had my own box, which was a huge promotion. Mm. It was like, you get to stand on the box. Yep. So I was elevated, you know, figuratively and literally above all the dancers. Me and
so hang on. So you had the whole of Canada checking out your box. Is that
exactly?
Happened?
Oh, and, nice. And check out my box. They did. Those cameramen. They were right from Sesame Street, I think. it was fun. It was silly. I did it with my flatmate. And then I had a little bit of banter, you know. Banter always wins. I had a little banter backstage. They saw me. They just, you know, you get to know everybody on set. And then they let me present a few little things on the Canadian MTV, which at the time, it's not MTV. It's Much Music. And now Canada has a proper MTV. So it's confusing. But back then, we only had Much Music.
Right.
And I presented on that. And then I presented a children's dating show. You know, Blind Date?
Yeah.
It was called Teens Dating.
That sounds like a recipe for non-disaster, if ever I've heard one.
Oh, yeah.
Who signed that one off?
I don't want to say, but it was not me. And the children, and I call them children because they were like 14, and we'd put them in the back of a van and take them, with their parents' consent, like, bye-bye, take them to dates. And where can you go on a date when you're 14? They'd go to like a pizza shop. They'd go tanning. They'd go bowling.
Tanning?
Yep. They'd go
actual?
On a date, tanning. Yeah, they'd go fly a kite.
No, we got to go back to tanning. That's not a date to me.
Well, we'd ask them, you know, we'd do some field research and go, what do you want to do? And they were little, you know, your version of like a little rude boy. You know?
Yeah.
They were like from the suburbs, Scarborough and Mississauga, S&M we'd call it, are the suburbs of Toronto. And they were like little rude boys and girls, and they wanted always to go tanning, so we'd bring them tanning.
So that was a spray tan, I assume, was it?
No.
An actual sunbed?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And so, I'd report on all of it. Be like, how do you feel about Jimmy? And they'd be like, I don't know. Sometimes they'd smuggle liquor into the back of the van. And I was also, you know, assisting to babysit. I'd have to take away their booze.
Well, I'm going to have to drink this. Otherwise, you might get hold of it later. So down the hatch.
I wasn't drinking. I was a good girl. I was really shocked and horrified by these kids. Sometimes we had nice ones.
So this was a little while ago as well. So you kind of been that old when you were doing it. So
I was like 18, I think.
Yeah. So there's only 3 or 4 years between you and the kids.
Oh, yeah.
It must have been quite weird.
It was weird. I mean, I love weird. Everything in your life shapes who you are today. I think looking back, you look back on your town and remember it fondly. I remember those things pretty fondly now.
Mm.
And I didn't. The reason I stopped presenting is because a lot of times I would say something that was too far. I would say something that was a bit out of order. A lot of times they just want you to read the auto cue and smile. And I thought, oh, this is wrong. And I was working at Hooters
right.
Also. Yeah. Because when you work in the showbiz in Canada, you need a waitressing job to supplement your income. And Hooters is just a restaurant that sells beer and wings and shows sports on TV. And the girls wear little vests. It's not at all a strip club. Mm. A lot of people who've not been think it's a strip club. It's not. And there was a comedy club right next to the Hooters. And I just, one day I thought, I'm going to go there and do their open mic night. And I did. And that felt right, finally. I thought, oh, this is what I want to do is have my own say about things, be a presenter in a way, but present stuff that people think is funny and people can relate to and have a bit of a chat.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a transferable skill.
Mm.
And it's proven to be that because now you've just done your second full-length show, haven't you? Second hour.
Which went a lot better than the first.
Right, okay. So this is Nature's Candy.
Nature's Candy.
And you're about to do, imminently due to do some touring of that.
Yes, Nature's Candy was so good dun, 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 that we've decided to tour it.
Yeah. I mean, this comes off the back as well of lots of TV success.
I've been
this
so
year.
Lucky. Yeah.
It's been great. You've mushroomed, haven't you?
Mushroomed?
Yeah.
Oh, like a bomb?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's you are the bomb. Is that okay to say? It's
or just
very
like
90s.
Spread like a fungus.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. If people eat you, they will probably die.
Yeah.
So.
Or go to a festival. I have been so lucky. I did 8 out of 10 cats. And that one, they were so welcoming and it was so much fun that went well. And then I got to do some other ones as well. And I just love to have a chat. Basically, I just want to go around, talk about celebrities, meet people, and have a chat.
Excellent. So 2013, who's your celebrity tip? Honey Boo Boo was this year's.
Oh, gosh.
I imagine. Who do you think is going to mushroom next year?
I don't know. I don't know any.
It's difficult to pick, isn't it? Likelihood is that they're out there somewhere and we haven't heard of them yet.
I mean, Rihanna is making the very quick transformation into the new Whitney Houston. And Chris Brown is Bobby Brown, and so that's happening. She'll mushroom the other way. There aren't any. I love Little Mix.
Oh, really?
I could see Little Mix.
You're getting behind Little Mix.
I'm right behind Little Mix. I could see them doing a One Direction.
Yeah, yeah. One Direction are massive now, aren't they? Really, really big. Watch out for Little Mix then. That's Catherine Ryan's tip.
That's my thoughtless, fast answer.
Yeah.
I do love them, though.
And if people want to come see you on tour, all the dates are on your website, presumably.
Yes, my website is Catherine Ryan, with a K, catherineryan.co.uk, and all my dates are up there. We're going as far as Edinburgh and Newcastle, around there.
Wow.
And so we're trying to go to your town, and we'd love you to come.
Excellent. And also, I don't know if this is something that you've noticed. I tried to look at the About You section on your website. It's just blank. I thought maybe it was a...
I like that. Yeah.
I thought maybe that was some kind of critique on About You sections of websites. That's how I chose to read it.
Good. I've got a sex tape coming out, and I don't want to give too much away.
Exactly. Keep it mysterious.
Kim Kardashian's mom has sorted that for me. It's with Ray J.
It's going to launch you.
The reason there's no About Me page is I don't know what to write about me. It's the same idea as having a statue of yourself in your front room. What do you say about yourself? And my web designer guy at Rockin' Industries, he's amazing, it's called Chris Lake, he said, you need to write this yourself, and that's why it's not done.
Okay, it's apathy. It's apathy, baby. Catherine, thanks for coming in to chat to us.
Thank you very
much. It's been
lovely. For having me.
Guys, 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 it's the end of the show, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for me to leave you. Probably tumescent, but also very happy at having experienced what I did, which was, I think you'll agree, by all accounts, a podcast. Can we say more than that? Who knows? Probably not. Producer Joel is shaking his head. We'll leave it there. Join us next week when it's our Christmas special. That's right, get your jingle bells out. Hang the mistletoe. I'm coming round for another kiss if I can get round the court order. Do check out the blog on joindave.co.uk/podcast. We're on the iTunes under the Dave Weekly name. I'm on Twitter at Ben Shires, and so is Dave at @join_Dave. Until then, you have yourselves a very merry pre-Christmas week. Toodles doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.